So, but I'll let you be the start though. Since you got the nice radio voice.
I got a Facebook too.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's Tuesday night. You know what that means.
Yeah, exactly. He must. Is this what it's really like?
No. I just want to get the broadcast right this week.
Yeah,
all that because I tried to get Star Wars on the damn show.
Didn't you fuck it up last time too?
Yes. And I got a copyright claim this time from YouTube. It's like, you fucks.
The mouse is coming.
Yeah, they came all right. Hmm. At least it's just a claim.
Yeah.
But what you didn't hear was Saturday night or Sunday night at the Sim 500 League, and I played the old CBS theme song.
Uh-oh.
And got away with it.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I've once on my Twitch stream, I played the TBS.
Mm-hmm.
It was for Suzuka. Not Suzuka, but when we did Motegi.
Right.
Remember when they did the old TBS Thunder theme?
Yep.
Yeah, I played that on my stream right before Motegi. And
they hit you with it?
They didn't hit me with it. No, I got away with it.
Well, I did mine off YouTube. So I was like, well, if YouTube's going to claim YouTube, we got a problem here. So, anyways, all right.
Beautiful.
I sound like Beavis. Hello again. Welcome in to the Here for the GLSR podcast as we wrap up Daytona and go into Homestead. I don't remember what number episode this is, but it's another one. And I'm filling in for Sam. Sean's here, who filled in for, I guess you could say filled in for me. He's a regular now, so he's not really filling in for anybody. But Sean, welcome in, man. Coming off a great race, except for you, at Daytona.
Yeah, welcome. Welcome to the show. I know we're kind of got this like weird like threesome, if you will, of hosts. Well, I mean, it is Sam. His voice is seductive, what can I say? But we got like three people doing the show at any given time. So, but unfortunately, Sam couldn't be here this week because he is sick. So, but yeah, he and I and the rest of the league are just coming off of Daytona. And yeah, it was a great race for some, really terrible race for others, including myself.
Yeah, and even the broadcast kind of had issues. But needless to say, we got through it and we had a first-time winner again. Mm-hmm. And not to mention, if we go back to last season, we're looking at what I think it's 11 different winners now in 15 races, or 12 for 15 now, or something like that. So it's another great start to a season. If you didn't get a chance to watch the broadcast, first off, why not? Second off, go do it. And then third off, you missed Jacob Bell win his first career race and his first career start, leading one lap for guess what team? The only team that leads one lap and wins races.
Yeah, it was written in the stars, wasn't it? I mean, we kind of talked about it. That's Ace Racing MO, where they just kind of, you know, they aren't really there until they're there at the end. And that's obviously when it matters. And I mean, the story, honestly, of Jacob Black, I mean, for those of you guys and gals who are not aware, at least in our Discord, he self-identified, mind you, as a driver who had an 800 IR. So for those of you who may or may not be familiar with that system, the I rating is essentially a collection of a driver's skill-ish based on like finishes and relative to like the strength of field. And oftentimes there's a debate on whether I rating is important or not. But what we can say is that more times than not, if you have higher I rating, you're usually pretty good. It means you've had, you know, some laps around the track. And if your I rating's low, either you're just getting started, which I don't think is the case here, or you've just had a bunch of misfortune. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're a bad driver, just that maybe bad luck finds you more often than not in the officials.
It basically means stop running C-fixed if you're an A-car driver.
Yeah, but, I had that happen once.
I ran C-fixed to Darlington last week, and I was like, this is a mistake. Yeah, I started 18th, finished 4th. I thought I did okay, actually.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, right. So that race in the end, obviously, first 7 or 8 laps, fairly clean. And then disaster struck. And unfortunately, the disaster took you out. I'm trying to view it in my head here. I'm actually, believe it or not, I'm actually doing some engineering / crew chiefing while I'm recording this. So nice. I am multitasking. So I don't even have a race up right now other than the one I'm actually helping with. So that wreck came out from contact, it looked like 3 wide. And one guy, if I remember correctly, I don't remember the driver exactly, came down and there was contact. And you were the bottom truck, and you pretty much went Dale to the wall. And pretty much took a lot of trucks out. I think there was about 10 to 15 trucks involved in it.
So one of the things that we've been talking about is, you know, that me and Sam talked about last week was, you know, 40 trucks, right? Or close to it. I mean, yeah. I think we're like 36,
I think, started, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So, I mean, lots of trucks. And, you know, we've run out there before like that. And, you know, when it's first race of the year, new drivers that you've not raced with before, drivers that, you know, maybe have something to prove. I mean, I don't know. And yeah, that's kind of what happened is, you know, I had settled in. I know the Down Under Racing team, we kind of had just settled into our positions, and I had no problem riding where I was. I was like, I'll be here for it. Honestly, 80 laps, if that's what it takes. Like, you know, nobody was really pushing. And then a couple guys, Peyton Johnson was one of them. And I can't remember the other truck. Was it Mike Robinson? It may have been Mike Robinson. I'm sorry if it was not. But I thought it was one of the 4X trucks.
I think it was Mike, because I remember he getting turned around and making a comment or something. I remember talking to him about it earlier this week.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, so the thing is he gets to the point. The way it unfolds is basically Peyton's riding behind. He doesn't feel like Robinson is going. He's getting frustrated because he's having to check up, and the guy's kind of swerving everywhere, so it's hard for him to, you know, to hook up on the bumper. Basically, he decides he's going to take Peyton decides he's going to take it 3 wide into, I believe that was turn 3.
Yep.
And decides he's going to take it 3 wide. He's trying. His move is to shuffle Robinson out of the draft because he doesn't necessarily want to be 3 wide, but he wants to shuffle him out of the draft because he thinks that he's a liability in front of him. And so he gets in. So he goes to make the pass or rides close up on Mike and gets, you know, tries to get Mike up out of the racing line and basically freight trained. And what ended up happening was Mike came down on him a little bit and touched, and as you said, I was the first guy at the scene of the crash because I was the bottom truck of that 3 wide, and yeah, just pitched us into the wall really hard. Oddly enough, though, as hard as we hit the wall, our damage was not, I mean, our damage was bad, don't get me wrong, but it was like the truck did not require 30 minutes, and I thought for sure that on the impact I was looking for smoke. And we never had any. So, you know, obviously really unfortunate for the Black Horizon number one to start off a new branding, a new number, and, you know, now we're in the wall. But I think, you know, ultimately kind of what we're talking about here is it's just people need to learn to be patient.
And, yeah. Good.
You know, no, I mean, you just got to learn to be patient and, you know, understand that, you know, if the guy's causing you to check up or, you know, you think he's a liability. I mean, you got 80 laps. We're on lap 8. Like, there, you know, in my opinion, there's no need to try and shuffle him out of the draft. I think at this point, he shuffles himself out of the draft. Honestly, it has been my experience that drivers like that will eventually shuffle themselves out. Yeah, does it suck that you're kind of maybe moving backwards or not moving forwards with some of the runs that you're getting off of the corner? Absolutely. But, like, is it, I mean, look at what happened. Like 15 trucks got wadded up for you know, for nothing, essentially. I mean, for something that we could have just waited it out and had either pit strategy cycle that driver out or that driver get cycled. I mean, there's no, we should not be trying to cycle drivers out of the draft, in my opinion, on lap 8 of an 80 lap race.
Well, that's one of those. Yeah, I agree with what you're saying there. I think if it was the situation where, you know, a driver's trying to go to the back in any way, shape or form, if they're trying to get there, I would say, yes, that driver probably wants to communicate and say, hey, I'm looking to go to the back. In that case, just get up to the wall or something. If you're on the top side, some people, if they're on the bottom, they'll just jump to the apron and go to the back and hope they don't lose the draft. But yeah, it's just unfortunate that you had that situation happen with Robinson and you know, he gets turned, but the interesting part of history that's involved, I'm actually watching the broadcast now on the other screen of mine. And I'm watching the wreck here. Man, you about went over. Tell her how to get through there. Brandon Alphen about became the first champion in history to start his next race almost last in points.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of the guys who, yeah, we didn't hear from him hardly at all at Daytona because it just ended that quickly.
Yeah, him and Cameron Ingram. Who else I watched? Blaine Sparling goes climbing in there. I mean, there were so many trucks involved.
Essentially, all of Down Under Racing was killed in that incident, except
for Travis. Down Under at the end.
Yeah, except for Travis. Travis was the man. Travis was fighting for the W, actually, at one point. He legitimately had a shot.
So. There's a lot of unique names we're going to talk about that were fighting for the W, but the one interesting thing I've seen on the stream here, it's the first time I've ever seen drift outside of a, all right, let's call it a Burger King truck.
Yeah, right.
In any way, shape, or form. When I saw that Sith Talk truck, I'm like, who's in the 14? I'm like, oh, wait, that's drift.
Yeah, I've never seen him in a vehicle that did not have the Drift King livery, and at most, it was slightly manipulated. But no, I've never seen him in a truck that was like completely different than his usual ride.
Ooh. You know what? I'm looking at the wreck right now, and as I'm seeing this, I'm watching the slow-mo. I didn't even realize this. There was actually slight net code in the contact with Mike and
Peyton.
Peyton, thank you. Yeah. And it almost looks like the truck ahead was the. I'm just watching off a video here, so I don't know the names, obviously, off the top of my head here. I know you're on the bottom, obviously. You got Robinson there at the top side. That blue truck in front of him comes down. As soon as I see the number, I'll tell you who it is. Oh, the 29. It's, oh my gosh, I am terrible. The one guy.
I'm the one.
I'm going to call, well, no, that one guy. He finished third in the race, but man, forgive me, Logan? No.
Oh, no.
I'm trying to get to the standings. Give me website, please. Thank you. This is called live broadcasting, people.
Yeah.
Luke Knupp. I am so sorry, Luke Knupp.
You know what's really funny about his situation is he told me in fantasy when I posted my fantasy picks for Daytona, he wrote back to me and he said, should have picked me. And there he was at the end fighting for the win.
Yeah, he sure did. But no, Luke starts to move down a little bit and it looks like Mike goes to go with him, just kind of following him and not realizing, hey, there's a car in the middle and the net code brought them together is what it looks like on the replay. And unfortunately for you, you were a smashed beer can.
Yeah, I had no, like, it was literally one of those situations where I was just riding and then next thing I know, I'm going in the wall and I'm like, what the hell just happened?
Like, this early? Really?
Yeah, it was, I mean, I knew it was, I knew the expectation, you know, I knew it was, you know, obviously probably going to happen, but yeah, it happened really sudden. And I was like, oh, that sucks. But
so, yeah. So that happens, and obviously you guys go racing for a little while, and you know, of course there were wrecks at the end. And we had some names up there at the front of the field by the end of this race that we were like, we've never seen these guys up there. And it was really cool to see. We had Robert Lukens up there at one point. You had Travis Iacovacci up there battling for the win at one point. Just to name a few, fighting for this win because it's Daytona and that brings everybody together. But then there's this newcomer named Jacob Black that's up there just battling. And what it comes down to in the end is what they call the old green white checker finish.
Yeah. I mean, it was a situation where you just had like, because so many trucks had got taken out and so many guys had started mid to back pack who are usual, like, you know, quote unquote front runners. And now you've got like, it's a whole new world. And just like, you know, just like any time we watch Super Speedway package racing, right? You get guys up there like, you know, Priest or, you know, some of those guys like Bubba Wallace who are like, you know, they're never really around until it's time for Super Speedways. And then they just happen to always be there, or there's a big accident and they're up there with a shot to win because they just were able to stay out of the trouble. And you're right, we got all the way down to the end of the race, and then we get the caution flag, and then it comes down to a green white checkered, and it's like, oh my god, you know, how is this gonna play out?
Yeah, and of course, at a super speedway race, as you say, you just never know. So we get to, you know, the restart, and actually wasn't a green white checker. I apologize. We actually went green with like 7 laps to go.
Yeah, yeah.
And you had Lukens. You have Lukens up there. You got Peyton Johnson, a newcomer. You got Tim Abril, who had just picked up his first career win at Chicagoland last season. So you've got those three up there. You've got Lukens up, as I mentioned, Jason Dalton in his number 4 truck up there after his disaster season last season. He's sitting up here in this pack. And I mean, I don't know if we want to bring this up or not, but it's a topic that's been brought up a few times. They matter, lap trucks, because at the end of this race, it seems to happen every time. I don't know how. You go back to the Dover race last season where Cody Beatty gets the win, and somehow a lap truck of Chris Evans is right there in between. And of course, comes the whole conversation of did he affect the finish, types like that. I'm watching the wreck here with 6 to go where Christopher Dean's off the pace on the bottom, and Iacovacci gets up into somebody, and they all but bring out a caution, but they stay green. So you get that deal, and then here at Daytona, you get Evans up there with his teammate pushing him, and then they end up wrecking. Evans gets into somebody, and they wreck behind Black, and it lets him set sail to the win.
It's a matter of fact that, like, he comes down on Dalton, so he pushes Black to the lead, or is pushing Black, and then, nice, and then he, you know, he goes and clears himself essentially on Dalton's truck, you know, and he's, you know, at this point, it's one thing when you're one lap down, hell, it's one, but when you're at this stage of the race and you're 40 laps down, you know, 30 to 40 laps down, like, you got to get out of there. Like, you got to get out of there. I mean, I know you want your driver to win or whatever, but you got to get out of there, because what we saw was, you know, he collided with Dalton. He takes Dalton out of contention for the lead, and that's just, you know, or for the win, and that's just, in my mind, is just inexcusable behavior on the racetrack, because now you've, you know, I mean, yeah, your teammate's going to win the race, but why were you even there? Like, why, you know, you shouldn't be up there fighting, especially that many laps left. You shouldn't be fighting amongst the leaders. You took out, yeah, your guy won the race, but you took out trucks who, you know, potentially could have won that race. And so I felt terrible for Jason, because, you know, like you said, Jason had a terrible season last year. I know the feeling. I was with him. We were talking
multiple bad seasons.
Yeah, we were talking often about, like, hey man, like, this, you know, this is just one of those things. But, you know, and now he doesn't even get a shot to fight for the victory, because the race outcome has been manipulated, in my opinion, by that move. And so it's really upsetting to me. I mean, not to take anything away, obviously, from Jacob, who obviously had to be there at the end for something like that to happen. But I just don't understand why you involve yourself in the race for the win when you're so many laps down.
So let me ask this question here. I'm actually watching the finish right now. One thing we should mention, there was actually a penalty on Jacob Black earlier in the race coming out of pit road. Yep. He and Travis decided to play whack-a-door coming off pit road, and it knocked Jacob onto the track, so he got penalized for a bad pit exit. So he was a lap down in this race, got a caution, got back on the lead lap. So with about four laps to go, the pack gets back together. Is that the point where Evans, in this case, should be like, you know what? I've got you here. I'm out. I can't, you know, I don't want to compromise this race.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you do, is you get him to that point and you let him race on his own. I mean, that's not, I mean, like, he doesn't, he's obviously made it to that point. He's clawed back. Like, you know, he doesn't need any additional help. And, you know, like, if he's on the outside and you, let's just say he's maybe on the tail end of the pack, and you push him to the front, like, if it's like kind of like, say, like almost like a Talladega situation where you can push him on like the outside, that's one thing. But on a narrow track like Daytona, where it's already pretty tight quarters and you're coming down to the end of the race, so the quarters are even tighter than what they would have been, you know, any other time. It's just in my opinion, at that point, you've done all that you can do. You have a driver who's in the top five. You don't need to help him anymore. He can help himself. He can, you know, he needs to be the one who's making those moves, because what ends up happening is, yeah, he wins the race. And, you know, again, no disrespect to him winning the race, but like, his competitor was taken out by somebody who shouldn't have even been there. And so, yeah, of course, nobody's going to catch him coming around the corner because the guy is dead, essentially. Right. And so, like, he can't do that. So, I mean, I think, yeah, if it's one of those situations where he's in the back of the pack and you want to push him, if you want to push him up past a couple trucks, or at least have him clear like an outside line or something like that, definitely you can have him, you can give him a shove, but then you disengage. Like, you've sent him on his way. Like, it's in his hands now. He needs to be a driver. Because I feel like by being there in that lead pack, you take away some of the focus of your driver, right? Like, because what we should be talking about right now is the fact that Jacob won his first race and his first ever shot. And he was basically the, what was it? What's that horse's name?
Oh, geez.
Strike or whatever, Rich Strike. Yeah, Rich Strike. Like, he's basically like that. He was like the lowest, he's probably had the lowest odds, if you were to odd him up, he probably had the lowest odds to win the race. And he wins the race, but instead of talking about him winning the race, we're talking about like, okay, well, why is this guy 40 laps down pushing dudes for the win? And it's taking away, I think, from his driver. And you know, and I talked to Chris after the race, and he knows what he did was stupid. And so, you know, obviously they were penalized. He was penalized 10 points, and thus was also, you know, the team was penalized for the actions, because, you know, that's just, there's rules. And if you're reckless driving and you decide that you're going to clear yourself when you're 40 laps down in the lead pack, like, that's going to, you know, that's going to be met with discipline. And, you know, it just sucks for everybody all around. And I agree, like, push him, give him the shot, get him into the pack, disengage. Like, there's nothing that you can do to better your position at this point. Disengage and let your guy go out there and win the race on merit versus, you know, controversy.
So, yeah, in the end, there's the penalty. I was going to ask, actually, and I haven't had a chance to talk too much in the, I have access to the Oval Office with you guys and stuff like that, and I haven't had a chance to jump in there and see what all had taken place, but it was a 10-point penalty for team and driver, which is, you know, a situation that happened. And I think the one, if I had to say the one part that disappointed me was more the reaction on Discord afterwards, when he was kind of like, oh, well, I did it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But that's, you know, neither here said or done. We're not going to, I'm not here to bash Chris or whatever. He's a good dude, but yeah, he made the decision. He goes on, and with that happening, Jacob Black wins. Robert Lukens finishes second, his best career finish. Robert Lukens. I was listening. I was interviewing him, and I'm like, man, I hope he even knows like what to say here or whatever. Cause it's like, poor Robert. He, you know, usually is running towards the back or has his own issues and stuff. And I was happy for the man. And but he finishes second, and then Luke Knupp comes back, finishes third. Telder somehow gets fourth. Dalton ends up fifth. And so a wild race at Daytona, and I'm sure the conversation is going to come back up. And it goes back to the conversation from a couple seasons ago when season five, we decided not to run any super speedways at all. So the question is, after a race like this, does a super speedway still belong?
Yeah. You know, I think that it does, and I'll tell you why. It's a popular quest. Like, everybody wants the super speedway. It is a style of racing. It's just like all the other racetracks that we do. The mile and a halves are their style of racing. Some of them are different than others, but largely, you know, it's a mile and a half. Road course racing. Road course racing is obviously its own beast. You have your own things that you need to be paying attention to on road course racing that you don't have to do any other time. Dirt track racing. We go dirt track racing. That's a whole nother separate, you know, discipline that you have to understand, and a driving style you have to understand. And super speedways are no different. Like, does it suck? You know, does it suck when half the field's wiped out because, you know, somebody can't hold their horses? Yeah, it sucks. But that's part of it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if, you know, that's so, yeah, I think super speedways absolutely do belong. But what I will tell you, with the limited amount of inside baseball that I have in regards to season eight schedule, there will be a super speedway. However, it will not be first.
Which will be interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So we're looking. So I can tell you in short, like, yes, they belong. And I will firmly say they belong by telling you that we are going to have one next season. But what I will tell you is that it will not be the first race of the season this time. Because, like you said, I felt personally that Auto Club put on a fantastic show for a season opening race. It does all the same things that you want a super speedway to do. Lots of room for racing, multi-groove, low opportunity for caution. So, you know, I think that something like that could definitely be in the conversation. But yeah, I think to answer your question, yes, super speedways do belong, and they will continue to belong, because this is the type of racing and people like to do it. Some people like it, some people loathe it.
Super speedway racing, I agree 100% on everything you said there. It's the only style of racing, and I mean this with, like, no disrespect at all, where a Robert Lukens, where an Anthony Marshall, if you will, a driver that doesn't normally run in the top 15 or 20, has their struggles or whatever, and it just goes out there and does the best they can. It gives them a chance to win a race. See Robert Lukens finishing second. It gives everybody an equal shot by saying, hey, if you're on the lead lap, you can win this race still.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's an element there. And going back to the big wreck comment, you can have a big wreck on any track. Mm-hmm. Technically, you can have a big wreck at Lanier. You can have a big wreck at iRacing. You can have a big wreck at Brands Hatch.
I think we had a big wreck at USA.
You did. We had 17 big wrecks there, if I remember correctly. That's part of racing, like you said. So, yeah, I agree 100%. That's interesting to hear about the whole not being the first race of the season thing. That's going to make things very interesting when that time gets here next season. But, yeah, Jacob Black gets his first win and his first start. And off top of my head, that would be the third person, I believe, to ever do that. Of course, race number one of all time would be the first, which that was Chris Evans, ironically. Ricky Springer would be the second. Yep. This is your third. So I believe. I could be wrong on that. But so congratulations to Jacob. And, yep, another first-time winner to start the season off. So anything else on Daytona we want to cover before we take that, what's about a three, maybe four-hour trip down I-95 to the Florida Turnpike, down past the F1 Grand Prix to Homestead?
Yeah, I think that's it for Daytona. I can't think of anything off the top of my nugget that would warrant talking about. So, yeah, I think we can go ahead and head to Miami.
Will you be stopping at Dr. Britt Baker DMD's office for a tooth work before the race in Orlando?
Well, absolutely. I mean, if the opportunity arose, I would do that. Can't be any worse than what happened yesterday. So we're lucky. I'm lucky to even be talking. So maybe I could have used her services versus the fine folks at the Department of Defense. So
that's a hell of a term. Anyways, right. So all right. So Homestead. Here we go. Race number two of the season. Homestead is been a good race, and this is kind of it's a great track, first off, and my opinion fits the bill for a track that could easily and you could even say still host the NASCAR finals, but could be the finals of any series that races. This will be the fifth trip to Homestead, and I'm sorry, the fourth trip to Homestead. Some reason it says five, but I'm seeing the race history here. And
is it already counting tomorrow's race?
It has tomorrow's. Let's see, February 23rd. No, I guess. Yeah, this is the fifth trip. Never mind. There is the Miami race of 2021. This says the winner still to be determined. So I don't know if Travis hasn't determined a winner yet from that race. But it says here Zach Allman won that race.
Recall the championship.
So
we don't have a winner.
Yes, and then Christopher Dean won in September of 21. In that race, J.W. Miller finished second. And then Clark Genekin won the third race, which was last season. Now, here's some irony, if you will. The race in September of 2021 was right after I had had my four wisdom teeth pulled out. So I wasn't sure if I was going to do the broadcast live or not. So we decided to hold off a day or two before I did the broadcast. And instead, I turned into Sam Barnes's crew chief and spotter that night. And twice in that race, a caution comes out during green flag pit stops, and Sam was the only one left on the track that had not pitted. And I was like, I still hold this to Sam. I'm like, Sam, I almost won you a Homestead race, you know.
Yeah.
But didn't happen, obviously. Dean won that race, and then Clark Genekin won this race, and now here we come to what is called the D-Dub Button Boxes 180.
Yeah, and it's going to be awesome. I'll tell you right away, you know, we've had a lot of practices going up this week. I think just about every driver, honestly, on the circuit has competed in the practices. We've had GLSR admin or GLSR like race officials, if you will. We put on our usual Sunday practice and practice race. And then the folks over at KDJ2 also had another one last night. So, and we've had a number of drivers out there every time. And I mean, it's really brought a lot of people. A lot of people love this track. Because of its multi-groove capability, you know, you can rip the fence if you want, or you can rip the very bottom. Tire management is huge here. You know, it's not a lot of cautions usually out here for our races. So it's definitely a very popular track and a natural step in the progression of like, okay, now we've done a super speedway race. Now we're going to do a race where we still have plenty of room, different grooves to race each other, but maybe a little closer quarters. And some other kind of things like slide jobs could be a thing, etc., all over the place here. So it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, the track, obviously, as you mentioned, multiple. It's actually the first track, if I remember correctly, of the major racing's terminology or whatever to go to the progressive banking back in 2003. Went from a flat, like 6-degree banked mile and a half track after it was a rectangular mile and a half track. And they threw 18, 19, and 20 degrees of banking on all three and basically went to work from there. And that's what we've had the last 20, almost, what, 19 years of racing there at Homestead. So here, well, that can't be right. This is where you know that we got to talk to Travis about the website. It says Jason Clark has the fastest lap, and somehow he ran a negative 0.0001 second lap.
That's because he was on his hood.
Would that be because he went backwards, maybe?
Perhaps.
On a negative. Anyways. Okay. Three different pole winners so far. Obviously, one of the races is missing on here, according to the website. Clark Genekin led 110 laps last year, just blew the field away pretty much. And that win. I don't know if we're going to see that this season. I don't know right now if you're going to see many races where one guy goes out there and just puts a whooping on the field.
Yeah.
And I think because of that, I think the sky's the limit when it comes to strategy. I think you're going to see some people short pitting, some people going long with tires, change tires and things like that. But for 120 laps, you're probably looking at pit stops around probably the 25 to 27 mark. If I had to do the math off the top of my head, which would be four stops, I think.
So I think in our practices, we were able to do about anywhere between, I think you can get up close to 32 laps, actually. Okay. Because I know I stopped on on the practice race we did on Monday. I stopped on lap 30, and I think that was too soon. I think I started too soon. I stopped too soon. Sorry. Yeah. So I think 31, 32-ish, I think is your optimal, is your stop time. I think one thing that you want to look at too is the undercut.
Yes.
The undercut here is huge. So judging and timing that undercut just right, I think it potentially could win somebody the race, honestly, based off of what I've seen so far.
And for those who don't know what the undercut is, it's basically where if I'm behind Sean racing and I can't get around him, which is like that most races I race around him, not because he blocks, just I'm just not that good. Basically, I would come to pit road, take tires. About a lap or two later, Sean comes to pit road, and all of a sudden, I'm ahead of him. They call it the undercut. So, so that could be interesting. So 30, 60, 90, obviously, you're looking at a three-stopper, or, I mean, some people might dare say run 25 25 25 25 four stop it and go to 120. You could see that too. I don't know if the time is worth the risk though when it's over with, but that's another story for another day. what kind of expectations do you see happening here at Homestead this week?
I think it's gonna be crazy. So I think you're gonna see you're going to see some individuals that are going to be running, obviously, the top line. There's going to be those who are dedicated to ripping the fence. It usually provides a little more degradation to the rear tires, which then could present some interesting situations late in the run, because you're going to be maybe struggling to come off the corner. But then again, if you're running the low end, if you rip the bottom like I do, I pretty much ride the white line on both sides of the racetrack. You're going to experience a little bit more front degradation than you would expect. So then what ends up happening is you get tight late in the run. You're getting tight, and so you're going to have to make some adjustments, to the truck with what we can in a fixed setup, adjusting your brake bias to maybe help get rotation through those corners, because once that front tire is worn, it just starts to push, it gets really bad there towards the end. I know we did, like I said, we did that KDJ2 practice session. I started first and led just about every lap, minus pit stops. But at the end of my run, I was experiencing some tight entry to the corner or tight exit to the corner. So I was having to get out of the throttle, even though I had at the time, I think like a 3 second lead, I was pushing, up the racetrack. And so I started to lose some of that lead, because of the tightness of the truck. So expect that you're going to see two racing lines. So the bottom, line and then the top line will come in. Some people may try to run the middle. I don't think there's really any benefit to doing that, but, you'll see it. That's what makes Homestead great. I think you will see some interesting strategies. I think you're not going to see a lot of people pitting early. You may see people trying to pull the one lap undercut, but I don't think you're going to see people trying to do anything too crazy, because again, we're going to have close to 36 trucks, a lot of new drivers, guys still getting used to racing around each other. So there is a high probability that there may be a caution. I hope not, but there could be a caution. I think that's what we're going to see, in terms of on track action. He who can manage their tires the best will probably, end up winning this one.
Well, this one's right up JW Miller's alley, it sounds like. So
he's not here, so thankfully we don't have to worry about losing to him this season.
So it's such a tough race, and I'm listening to you, and of course my first thought in my head is okay, drag brake a little bit, back off the corner, let the car set down to the bottom, you'll be fine. But of course, telling you after the race now doesn't help any. But you know, you would think common sense that would be the first thing you do in that situation. But that's the fun part about this Homestead track, is all the different things you can do. I mean, you're going to see people tomorrow night run the tank out of gas, just trying to have the freshest tires at the end of the race. But yeah, the million-dollar question: when does tires come off? When do the not the when do the tires come off, but when do you pit? You know, when do the cautions come out? Strategies, pit penalties, so many different things. This field's going to be so tight tomorrow night. I think, you know, mistakes are getting to the point where they can't exist anymore. You got to get out there, you got to run 120 flawless laps and be able to control that truck to the best of your ability. And, you know, I think that's going to be a challenge for some of these best drivers. I mean, not to mention, you know, with the field going away the way it is right now, with the changes that have happened over here in the last year, I was looking at the win totals. We still only have two drivers with over 10 wins. We have one with 9, and then there's nobody in this league 7 seasons later. You know, obviously, what, 5 of the seasons, there have been 14 races, so that's, 28, that's 56, 70 races right there in itself. And then you got the other three or four seasons that had, I think it was like 15 races. I forget the exact number or whatever, but you're close to 100 races now. And we're looking at still only two drivers over 10, one with 9, and the rest of them 4 or below.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where I don't want to say the competition. So it's something that kind of was talked about last season a lot, was like, oh, the competition level is so high here. I think the competition level is high, but if you look genuinely at like some of the strength of field, I think we've had stronger strength of field. I think what you're seeing is people are starting to get used to some of these tracks that we're running often, and they're getting pretty good at them. I think you're also seeing, like last season, we had a lot of C-fixed kind of fixtures. So I think that what you're seeing is it's opening up the window for a lot more opportunities for people to win. Whereas before, it was like more like, okay, well, you know, we've got like, you know, in the case of like Ricky Springer, for example, like, I mean, he just dominated everybody in that season that he won the championship. You know, but then you have people like Allman, who had raced a long time, who had wins, who had a lot of wins. And so I think, you know, stuff like that, I think that the field is definitely compacting a little bit. I think the talent level is there, not necessarily because everybody's like alien fast, but everybody is just getting better at how to run around these guys. Because again, we still have a vast majority of the field that we've had for the last few seasons. With only a few kind of, you know, with probably like maybe 10 of the close to 40 drivers being like new-ish. So a quarter of the field might be new, but a lot of these guys are raced around each other. I think they're more comfortable. I think things are becoming more predictable in terms of like, you know, how the drivers will react, or who's going to have accidents, or who's going to have issues. I think that it's just starting to kind of even out a little bit. And I think that it's opening up that the tracks as well. The track selection is opening up the potential for people to win, because it's not, you know, we're going to these kinds of places like Homestead that where, you know, anything is possible. I mean, we've got a lot of really great drivers in the field though. So I'm excited to see what happens for Homestead. Let me throw you a couple of names though, that I think you're going to want to watch. If you will, we'll get our fantasy lineup here in a minute, but I think you definitely want to be paying attention to this weekend. I'm going to say you're going to want to be paying attention to KDJ2. And I know that I picked them for my team champions this season. But I think I'm telling you, just by talking to them, watching them operate, and the addition of having Chris Dean, who, oh, by the way, is awesome at Homestead, I think that KDJ2 is going to have a fantastic week this week, led by Sam Fontaine. I think he's going to be the guy. And then I think you're going to have the rest of those guys, Dalton, Sutphin, and Dean, obviously, right there.
I think that's a great pick. Dean runs well on older surfaced tracks. That's one thing about Dean that I've noticed really quickly. Let's go back to Chicagoland, not this past season, but the previous season. Jason Dalton won that race on a track that is similar to Homestead when it comes to the older surfaces. So I think those are two good names to throw out there in a great team. Fontaine, who obviously he runs very consistent each and every week. And Brian Supfin, I've said 100 times, the kid's got so much daggum talent, but unfortunately just has luck that's just bad sometimes. And sometimes it's his own luck. Sometimes it's luck that's out of his control. So, yeah, I think he's going to be somebody to watch. I think that whole team is it's a great call on your part.
Well, Fontaine was awesome. So the GLSR official race that we did, which was 45 minutes of practice followed by a 45-lap race, Sam Fontaine won that race. He actually beat me by 1 second. Christopher Dean was not in that race. But one thing that I will say is Dean has actually had a little bit of problem coming up to speed on the racetrack. So usually, as we said, Dean's very fast, but in the practice session and then the KDJ2 practice and race, his speed was not as dominant as it had been before. And then once the actual race happened, and I don't know, again, this could be a sandbagging situation, there's no points on the line or anything like that, but when it actually came hammer time, Dean was not there necessarily. Now, that being said, I'm not like kind of contradicting my pick, but what I am saying is maybe this time he will not be as dominant, but Dean has this way of when he shows up to a track, I'm looking at Homestead, I'm looking at Phoenix, that if he shows up and he turns it on, you're not going to catch him. And Homestead is one of those tracks where if he shows up and he is focused and he is ready to race for the win, you're not going to catch him.
No, absolutely
not. And yeah, I mean, it's not going to happen. So in the KDJ2 race, like I said, I was lucky enough to be able to win that one by a few seconds over Sam. But again, that was a pit strategy situation and one of those where I was burning out my tires. But again, Dean started on outside pole position. I was first place. Dean was second place. So, you know, he has that capability to do that. So I definitely think that he's going to be a favorite to watch. Sam was the constant in both of those. So he beat me in that one, and then I beat Sam in yesterday. But Sam was also catching me because he stopped a little bit later and was doing better with his tires. So that's where I think Sam is going to be really good. And then Dalton and Supfin were right there in all of those events. So I think you're going to see a running of the old guard, I will say, at Homestead. I think, not to discredit the new drivers in the league, but I think, you know, with a lot of these drivers that we saw have a good race at Daytona, I think Homestead is going to be one of those situations where reality sets in maybe for some, and, you know, and it's maybe not going to be as enjoyable as the time, but I think that we also have some really good guys out there. I think, like, for example, Jonathan Tuckness, I think, you know, he's had some good pace, but it's going to be a matter of, can he run that number of laps and conserve the tires the way that he needs to? Same with like Peyton Johnson in the GLSR official race. Like, Peyton finished P4 in that race and even qualified sixth. But I mean, you know, when rubber came down to it and we were racing, he was amongst the top five, but I mean, you know, there was never really any threat to the old guard, if you will. So I think that's where it's going to be interesting.
So going off of that, I'm actually looking at the fantasy page, which, by the way, Fantasy Pick'em brought to you by D-Dub Button Boxes. Get them a little plug on here. Couple of people, and I'm one of those, I've done fantasy football for, how old am I now? Almost over 20 years. I got plenty of trophies sitting here behind me, and there's a reason why I was doing those videos when I did. Obviously, unfortunately, I don't have time to do them anymore, but, you know, the good thing is Sean brought the idea back of doing a Fantasy Pick'em here, so... Okay, I could do that. I got a little bit of time here, and I've done some studying while Sean has shared his opinion and stuff. And already, I've kind of put a lineup in my head together of what I'm looking for. And okay, I even took some off your notes of what you just said to me. lineup.
Well, I have my lineup too. So when you're done, I have my lineup. It's already in stone. Well,
I stopped doing fantasy after the first season because as my chair vibrates right now, I got a butt kicker from it. And I was like, all right, I did my part. You know, I'm a broadcaster. Let me let them go have fun now. So,
all right.
So basically, here's the deal. I'm not touching William Calhoun at all.
No.
And when I say that, again, all respect to William, great driver. The guy's just getting back on iRacing after spending some time doing some other things for this country and having a child. So he's got to get used to being back on iRacing again. And $176 value, you're looking at almost a quarter, actually more than a quarter of your money for William Calhoun if you pay that out of the $550. Dean, I'm probably not touching him right now, only because $152, I mean, if you get him, you got to go value. Let's put it like this. If you put Christopher Dean in your lineup, your next person needs to be all the way down here at the bottom, Jonathan Tuckness at $61, because then you balance it out, and then obviously you can go spend the rest of your, 61 and 152 is out 213, I believe, and 213 that still gives you $337 to spend on two guys. So now you can go get Alex Cummings, Sam Fontaine, Jacob Black's up here at the top, but there's other value picks at the bottom. Oh, by the way, Drayton Cook. I've raced with him plenty of times. Peyton Johnson, 108 and 106 apiece, sitting down here towards the bottom. Those guys are going to be value picks. Do you remember who finished second, Chicagoland?
When last season?
Last season.
No.
Cedric Ingram.
Oh yeah,
$120 for him.
Cedric was having a pretty good run at Daytona too. Mm-hmm. Yes, if I do remember.
Yes. So he's going to be a good pick. There's this guy in the one truck that might be pretty good. I'm not going to say his name because every time I said he could be pretty good, he wrecks.
No, don't you do it.
I didn't say it.
Don't you do it.
So, but yeah, I think those guys, if I were to put a lineup together right now, off the top of my head, I would probably go. I would probably be. I'm grabbing Fontaine. Mm-hmm. I'm probably going conservative here. I'm going for consistency, not for top finish. I'm probably going Fontaine. I'm coming down here. I'm probably going to grab Drayton Cook. I'm going to go with the momentum. I think Luke Knupp.
All right.
That's and a good one. I think I'm going Jason Dalton.
Oh, that's a good one.
I want to make sure that's money here. It's three. That's 301. I want to make sure I did the money right here. 301 and 108 is 409. Giddy up, giddy up. And I said, looking up 131, 409, 31. That's just shy of 550. So there you go. There's a lineup for you right there from me.
All right. Well, taking a look at all the finer detail points, all the data, I have picked Sam Fontaine, as it should be no surprise. Nobody's a bigger fan of Sam Fontaine than me. Nobody. And then I also have I'm gonna go over into your stable, Mr. Scala. And I'm going to pick Cameron Ingram.
Ah, Camo.
Yes, Camo. He did a good job. He set some pretty good times, and he's one of those guys I feel like could be in the top 10, top 5 pretty easy.
Was he top 5 in Chicago? I know he was close. He was up there.
He was up there, yeah, he's up there. All your boys are up there, Chicago. Then Grip Hack. No.
Yeah. How do you see?
Then my next pick, this may surprise some people, but I am going to ride the momentum of the lap one legends, and I'm going to pick Matt Telder. I feel like Matt Telder is going to get a good result. My building
just tremored.
Huh?
My building just tremored.
I know, right? He's probably going to hear this and go, why the hell did he pick me? But, no, I think that Telder is becoming a more mature, more complete driver. And I think he's going to be fighting for the win? Probably not. Do I think he's going to be fighting either around the top 5 or solidly in the top 10? I think so.
I can agree with that.
Yeah, I think so. He's been doing a good job. And then I will pick, I also, as is tradition, picked the driver of the number one truck. and I will not say that individual's name.
Fair enough. That who shall not be named.
So, but needless to say, I always, without saying it, I always bet on myself. And I find that when I don't bet on myself, I don't do very good. But when I do bet on myself, I seem to do well. I don't understand. But I'm hoping...
It's like a self-confident type thing.
Yeah. I'm hoping that I kind of feel like, you know, somebody else who I could easily switch out and somebody who I want to give credit to who's not here is Sam Barnes. Sam Barnes, I think, is a really good fantasy pick, and I'll tell you why. You're probably thinking, what are you, high? Like, maybe, but what I will say is that racing with Sam on Down Under, seeing how much he's put in this week to trying to perfect his craft at Homestead and turn good laps. I mean, we're talking about a guy who started in the back of the pack during the KDJ2 test race and drove up to fourth. He was running at the same pace and racing Chris Dean at Homestead. So I'm telling you, I think that I would not be at all surprised. I would not be at all surprised to see Sam Barnes at the end in the top 10.
I would not be either. I know, like, if you go off last season, you're like, how? Sam couldn't even finish 20 laps last season, which, you know, some could say is a fair point. But you also don't know what Sam's been going through either.
No.
When it comes to personal life stuff. So, you know, when you just show up to a race and you don't get many laps and you go out there and you try to do your best and you already are down on yourself, you're not going to do well. So right. Knowing Sam, he comes in here with a bunch of confidence that's easily could happen. He could go out there and yeah, he could unfortunately be taken out in a lap two wreck. It could happen, but he could go out there and get himself a top 10. So I think that's a, if you had to ask me fantasy wise, I think that's an aggressive pick, only because of the previous results. But I think there's a big reward if you use them.
Absolutely. And yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see. I know he's put a lot into it. What I absolutely don't want to have happen is, you know, something, you know, unfortunate happens. Cause I just know how much he's been putting in, the time and the pace, and he's serious this year about getting good and elevating, Down Under to a different level. I mean, obviously, you know, it's a team effort all the time. And so I think that he's going to do well, and I think we'll see a great race regardless. I think the person who's in for the most treat is going to be you, man. Cause you're going to be calling the race and you're going to be watching it all unfold. For 120 laps at Homestead with all those viewers out there, man, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, working on the viewer part, but yeah, the viewers are going to enjoy themselves. I know they did last week. Yeah, we'll see. It'll be at 8:45. I'm off work tomorrow night, so I'll be in early and ready to rock and roll. A couple of names that I want to throw out there that we didn't mention.
Okay.
From fantasy that I think are good names. Okay. The guy who finished second. At Chicago, or third at Chicago, won the championship, Brandon Alphen. Mm-hmm. He's going to be one to watch. Blaine Sparling, Mr. Consistency, Mr. David Pearson of the league, if you want to. The guy will sit back, I won't say his name, for 115 laps. And then come lap 118, here comes Blaine Sparling in the eighth position. Where did he come from? And Justin Bondurant.
Oh, yeah, Bondo still got all that momentum from the pre-races. Bondo's doing so good. Between Telder maturing, Bondo's pace is just outrageously good. I mean, it's just such a good time.
There's so many good ones. Travis could be another potential steal if you can get him in there and he runs well. So, if he's there. I know he's got a lot of things going on also. So, yeah, I think there's plenty of opportunity here for some good lineups.
I think so. I saw some. I mean, Tuckness at $61. Are you kidding me?
That's a steal.
That is a steal and a half, man. I mean, you could have a really solid lineup, including him, and then you can go out and get one of those more expensive drivers, and you'd still be in good position. So, yeah, I think lots of potential out there, and that's the thing that is so exciting about the first part of the season, right? We're still seeing who is, you know, quote unquote competitive, and who maybe is, you know, the surprise of the season. And so we'll have to just keep on going and see how it goes. But I can tell you, I want my value to be above $129. I'm dropping to like all-time lows right now in fantasy value. My stock is crashing. I'm like freaking Bitcoin, man.
Are you the value of gold?
Not quite. Well, I mean,
are you sure? Because the value of gold has never changed.
No. Well, maybe I was just always shit. Wow. And I just got lucky.
Yeah, it took an hour to get the best word out of him. All right.
I took heat. I took heat already.
I was swearing.
Yeah, not swearing. You get taken off the air.
Yeah.
So, well, it's whatever.
If you're still listening by now, we appreciate it.
Absolutely.
We've made it through the second podcast of the season, I think. Is there anything else we need to take care of?
No, man, I think that's everything. I really appreciate you joining us this week, and hopefully we can get everything back to normal with our podcast rotations and start getting some guests on.
Yes, we like guests. That is definitely something fun to do, and we're looking forward to Homestead tomorrow night or Wednesday night, depending on when you listen to this podcast. Could be like already over with by the time you listen, which would be a shame. But it is what it is. So go out there, enjoy the rest of your night and evening. Get ready for Homestead tomorrow night, 8:45 on the Captain Esports Network on YouTube. And I don't know, Sean, what are you feeling? How you feeling for yourself there, bud? What's it going to take to put the number one in P1?
Show up and do what I did. So what I've been doing in practice and what I've been doing in the practice races, man. Just keep the turn-ins late and keep the tires preserved. And, I think we're going to be in for a good result. I think we're going in this race with a lot better shot. Probably one of our better shots of winning on an oval in a hot minute.
There you go. So. That's gonna be good. He is as confident as in himself as I am that Kenny Omega is the Joker for AEW's men's side. Just there.
I hope he is. I miss him.
Now the female side, I don't have a clue.
Do they have a Joker?
They do, and it's facing Dr. Britt Baker. So I'm like, who the heck are they gonna bring in to face her?
Oh, there's a couple that have been released. You know who I think it could be? I think it's going to be, Gargano's wife.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Candice LeRae, is it?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be her because she just, her contract just ended. She's a free agent, I do believe. Her no-compete, I think, is over, I think. It said her contract expired, and if your contract expires, you don't have a 90-day no-compete clause, so I think it could be her.
Hmm. Okay, we'll see.
Maybe not, but that's going to be my pick. It's going to be Candice LeRae. We'll see.
There you go. We'll stop talking wrestling now for those who don't watch. Yeah. Anyways, all right, we're out. Any final words, Sean?
Nah, see you guys tomorrow night, or hope you enjoyed the show if you're watching this after the fact.
Yes, and as Sam likes to say, we're only here for the GLS.